So what we really have then is Darius setting up his newly acquired kingdom with 120 princes, and then three presidents over those 120. So each president would have 40 princes under him, and then Daniel over these three. He thought quite highly of Daniel too, apparently. And of course, maybe it was more than just a symbolic thing that Daniel had this gold chain put around his neck and he was given the rulership and be the third king. He really, in a strong sense, was a ruler at this time. But remember also that this nation was the nearest thing to any nation that God's people had to look to as a nation. They were still a nationality. And so maybe it fit within God's divine order of things to have Daniel then as a ruler over this nation that had made his people subservient. Because remember, the history of the Jews is the history of this little group of people that served the living God in the midst of numerous other peoples who serve idols. And the living God showing them that they are to obey him and that he'll bring about victories on their part due to their obedience over the nations that serve idolatrous gods. Well, during this period of time, it seems as though God's nation had been completely conquered, that God had just completely lost out, and the idolatrous nations and gods had completely won out. That's the way it looked, except for men like Daniel. Daniel stood between all this, and God worked through Daniel. And so we can begin to understand why then Daniel was put in this high position of authority, and he'd been in a high position now for most of his captivity. And over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give account unto them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. So he eventually was promoted to being over the presidents and over the kings, over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Now here we get into the political side of it, as politics always rears its ugly head. You have the strife, the enmity, the envy, and the jealousy. These other men, as they saw Daniel was being promoted a little higher than they, although they couldn't explain maybe why Daniel had greater spiritual powers than they had, they sought some way then to put Daniel down, looking for ways to get Daniel down. And you know, we just heard over the news today where one political camp in this nation was trying to find some ways to find where the other candidate had committed adultery. They were trying to get that little bit of information on him so they could use it against him. One side trying to put the other side down. So it seems that the people who run for politics, they have two primary goals in mind. One is to build themselves up, and the other is to run the other man down. They never say anything good about the other man, and they never say anything bad about themselves. And that's not humility. It's not a godlike spirit at all. It's not what God wants in a Christian. So they couldn't find any error or fault in Daniel. That was the problem, because Daniel, he didn't do anything wrong. He was a faithful person. Then said these men, "We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God." Now, the only way we're going to get anything on Daniel is to find something wrong with the law of his God, because Daniel keeps that law. And once we find something wrong with the law of his God, then we'll have something wrong with Daniel, because Daniel follows that law. In other words, let's get the law of Daniel's God, let's get that law to conflict with the law of the king some way, and then we'll have a conflict with Daniel, because Daniel's going to follow his God. Now, those of us who know the way that a Christian ought to go, we can see very easily how this situation could occur today. No question in our mind, we take God's way always over man's way. Never does man's way supersede God's way. It was true even back in the time of Daniel, and Daniel followed this principle so closely and so profoundly until even his enemies recognized it. The only way we're going to get something on Daniel is to find something wrong with the law of his God. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. Now they were approaching the king with their little proposition. They had a plot in mind where they were going to trap Daniel. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains have consulted together to establish a royal statute. It seemed as though they had a kind of a calling together like Congress or like Parliament. They've all come together and we've consulted together to make establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now here was the statute that they wanted to make. It's a very stupid statute that if any man makes any kind of a petition to any god or to any other man, instead of you, for a 30-day period, then he'll be cast into the den of lions. Well, it would take a king who just had a lot of pride and self-praise to even consider such a statute. You can't give a petition to any other god or any other man except this king for a 30-day period. They knew that'd be long enough to get Daniel real easily. Or he'd be cast into the den of lions. Now, the den of lions was probably lions that were kept in a place for the very purpose of putting to death those that would be the enemies of the king and those that should need the sentence of death. It's possible that it was just a kind of a zoo that they kept around the palace grounds, and they had some lions in there, but it was probably that the lions were for the purpose of executing the criminals. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, kind of like asking the president, we the Congress have passed this bill, we want you to sign it, no veto it now, sign the bill. Sign the writing, that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. Now this verse seems to say that once a law has been passed in the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians, that it never is changed. It cannot be changed because the law of the Medes and the Persians altereth not. And he repeats this several times, but I think he's not saying that the law can't ever be changed. I think what he's saying is that once it's gone through all of these channels to get passed, that then it is very hard to repeal it. One man, even the king, cannot repeal it once it gets passed. And it's kind of like what we'd say today, well, to get something done, it takes an act of Congress. Once they pass the law, it takes another act of Congress to get the law changed. And that's considered to be a very difficult, practically impossible thing to happen. Wherefore, King Darius signed the writing and the decree. So they got that passed. They were all set to trap Daniel. So in verse 10 we begin, we're going to see how he responded. When Daniel knew that the writing, see, he didn't act out of ignorance. He knew what. He went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Now this was Daniel's custom. He went into his house and he opened the window. Didn't do this thing in secret or private. It is like it always been done so he could be seen. He opened the window and he kneeled toward Jerusalem. Now, I understand that the Jews, whenever they were away from the city of Jerusalem, whenever they said their prayers, they would always face towards Jerusalem, whichever direction that was. When in the city of Jerusalem, they would face towards the temple, whichever direction that was. So Daniel was just doing what the custom of the Jews had been all along, and he'd done this aforetime. This was nothing new. He didn't change his routine. He opened the window, and he kneeled down three times a day, and he said his prayers to God facing Jerusalem. So this shows several things. It shows Daniel's devotion to his God. It shows that he would not change his practice, not even to the point of closing the window or changing the direction that he faced, nor to the frequency with which he did it. He did just like before because he knew this was what God wanted him to do, and he would not change. Now, as we apply this to ourselves today and put ourselves in Daniel's shoes, there are several dispositions we might take. Number one, we might say, well, after all, it is the law of the land. The king has passed this law, and it's law now, and it's punishable by death if you disobey it, and God does want us to obey these laws of the land, and so maybe we better just follow that. It's only for a 30-day period. We could just skip for this 1 month and not do it this month, just for this 30-day period, and God would be pleased with us because we haven't caused any uprising or any stir. We haven't rippled anything. The kingdom goes right along, and I get to keep my position as a very powerful man in this nation anyway. And this is probably the way God wants it to go. I just won't give prayers for a 30-day period, then everything will be fine. Or he could have reasoned like this. let me alter just a little bit. I think I'll just give them maybe once a day. And I'll do that at such an early hour that nobody will even know it. I'll kind of be sneaky about it. Or maybe I'll close the window so nobody can see me. Or maybe I'll go to another place and nobody's suspecting. I'll change my habits a little bit and still do it, and nobody knows but God and I, yet I will not be violating this law because nobody will see me. All kinds of variations that Daniel could have made to try to get around the fact that he was going to be thrown to the lions if he did this thing. But not Daniel. He did the very same thing just like he'd always done. And so as it comes down to us today, we know that we don't want to change the worship any. Even though there might be some pressure put on us to change it a different way or change it that way, or there may be some friction because somebody wants to change it and we're going to oppose the change. Or there may be an occasion in which it seems like it'd be just kind of easy to let down and maybe not even worship today. Let's just skip today. But not so. Daniel remained faithful. And here's the lesson for us. The faithfulness of Daniel. He didn't swerve. He didn't alter one bit. And just as those Hebrew brethren of his could have pretended to bow down to that statue that Nebuchadnezzar put up, Daniel could have pretended to follow this decree. Been real easy to rationalize, reason himself right on out of it. Real easy to reason out of it. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not. Then answered they and said before the king, that Daniel, which is of the children of the captivity of Judea, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the decree which thou hast signed, but maketh his petition three times a day. He's violated it three times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself. He realized he'd been trapped. He realized what a stupid act he had had by allowing himself to be such an object of adoration that he passed such a law as this. Because he knew that Daniel wasn't doing anything different. Daniel wasn't doing anything wrong or wasn't going to hurt him at all, wasn't going to harm his kingdom at all, because this is the way Daniel had always been. So the king was most displeased with himself and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. He tried to save Daniel from this. He worked at it. Said he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver Daniel. And we can just see then as this parliament is assembled here and as the king is going from one group to another trying to implore them, you know, let's let this thing ride. This man is doing no harm. It's not, this is destroying the very spirit of the law that we have. It's just to keep it by the letter this way, but it didn't work. His working didn't help. Then the king, when he heard these words, verse 15. Then these men assembled unto the king and said unto the king. Now they had a formal assembly in which their decision was going to be given now. Know, O king, that the law of the Medes and the Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king established may be changed. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. The last hope that the king had to save this wise ruler in his kingdom was that thy God, whom thou servest, he will deliver thee. That's the last thing the king had to say to Daniel. What else could he say to Daniel? And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet, and with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. So they sealed off this den of lions with a stone. You know, we have another account of a tomb being sealed with a stone, that of the Lord. And the fact that stone was put on the Lord's tomb to prevent him from being taken out, to prevent his resurrection from being faked and pretended, that fact became one of the strongest points in the proof that he was ascended and that he was truly the Son of God. And so the same thing would be true here. This den of lions was sealed, so Daniel couldn't get out. And so if he came out of this thing alive, it would have to be a miracle, not because he had escaped by the laxity on the part of the guards. Then the king went to his palace and passed the night fasting. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. He spent a very miserable night. Didn't eat, didn't drink, no music, no enjoyment, and no sleep. The sleep went from him. So we can see he really regretted this. He hated he'd been trapped into doing it. And we think of him much maybe in the way as King Herod, whenever he was tricked into putting John the Baptist to death. Herod didn't want to do it, but he'd seen that he'd been trapped. And it happened as a result of revelry, drinking, and doing the things that he shouldn't do, watching this fair girl dance and then her asking for John's head. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. He still had a ray of hope that Daniel might still be alive. So he went the first thing in the morning. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions? He says a lamentable voice. It was a voice as though it was a mourn, as though it was a funeral cry, as though he really didn't expect to get an answer. Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God has sent his angel. Here again we have the angels now entering into the picture. My God has sent his angel and has shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me, for as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. So Daniel just simply says that the Lord sent his angel. He shut the lion's mouth because he found me to be an innocent man. I have done him any harm, nor have I done you any harm. And, of course, another lesson in this for us is that not only are we to be faithful to God, but in being faithful to God, we're to also be found innocent. To be carrying out a lot of ritualistic things to God, such as attending the worship service and carrying out every item of worship, and yet on the other hand to be unfaithful in some other things so that we're guilty, that is not enough. It requires faithfulness as well as innocency, which Daniel was. And then he was delivered from the mouths of the lions by having the angel of the Lord come and seal those lions' mouths. Then was the king exceeding glad for him, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his God. Now we have another little item here that struck me. This happened because he believed in his God. Now there are a lot of people who would like to take this passage and just read that part right there and stop. Why was Daniel not eaten by the lions? Because he believed in his God. But we know as we read and study this that there's a much deeper reason than that. Because Daniel not only believed in his God, but he worked to carry out his God's desires. Excuse me for just a minute. 24. And because he believed in his God. Now, the point we were making there is that there are those who would like to just stop with the item of believing and not obeying. But Daniel had done much more than believe. This king seemed to believe in Daniel's God. He believed in his God, but he wasn't obeying Daniel's God. But Daniel not only believed, but he also obeyed. And so today, whenever we talk about belief and it constituting our faith, and James says that faith without works is dead, then we're talking about also works. Works are equally important to our salvation. With, of course, we must have belief, must believe, but you must also work. A girl in the office yesterday who needed spiritual help as well as other help. And so I asked her some questions about what she believed and what she felt that God wanted her to do, and with all of these different denominations, the Methodist and the Presbyterian and the Catholics and the Baptist and all, are all these people doing what God wants? And her answer was, well, all he wants is just to believe, isn't it? Isn't that all he wants? That was the substance of her religion. He just wants you to believe. But we know that that's not all that God wants, because the true belief that he speaks of necessarily implies an obedience. In 2 Thessalonians 1, he speaks of those that are going to be destroyed when he comes again and the judgment day occurs. And one of the reasons is because they obeyed not the gospel. So there's something to be obeyed. Jesus said, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. Now, not one command to believe in me, but commandments, plural, which could run into the hundreds. And so here it is with Daniel. Daniel wasn't hurt because he believed in his God, but believing in his God meant to Daniel that he was faithful to God in every respect. He was found to be innocent in the sight of God, and apparently for some 70 years now, he'd been going to his room and opening the window towards Jerusalem and getting down on his knees and making his petition to God and giving thanksgiving to God three times a day. That's a lot of work there. Daniel was faithful to his God. And the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives, and the lions had mastery of them, and break all their bones in pieces, or ever they came at the bottom of the den. So this was a cruel act on the part of the king. Not only did he take these men, but he took their wives and their children, people who were probably innocent, and threw them to the lions also. Then King Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. Now this is the way that he saw that he could multiply peace in his kingdom. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and steadfast forever, and his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. Even Darius, the king of the Medes, made this kind of a decree. Hard for us to believe. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Now, the Medes consolidated or confederated with the Persians, and so the ruler of the Persians then was Cyrus, and Cyrus is the one who really then usurped this throne of the Babylonians, although Darius had it for a brief time when the Medes were in the prominence. But Daniel prospered during the reign of both of them. So we'll close at that verse, and seeing again that we've had another great lesson here, when we stop and examine the case of Daniel in the lion's den. Not just a matter of somebody stubborn being put into a lion's den, but somebody who's faithful and who's obedient, being tested, and is God then saving him by the power of the angel. Anybody have any questions or comments up to this point?